Welcome to Behind the Smiles with your host, the Queen of Yappy herself, Dr. Gina Dorfman. This is a podcast where we interview some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. Brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. Book a demo today at yappyapp.com.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I'm your host, Dr. Gina Dorfman, and I'm here today with a good friend and a second-time guest, Dr. Erin Elliott. Erin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gina.
How are you today?
I'm actually really good. I can see here from my line of view the construction workers working on some projects we're doing at the house.
Oh, that's nice. Tell me about that, because that's always, I mean, construction work is always a hassle.
It's like it is.
You can't even stop. You just, you know, it's like one, you start one project and then they mushroom into additional projects. So tell me, what are you doing?
At this point, I'm praying that someone shows up every day to make some sort of progress. But back in 2003, we bought our house on our dream property, but it wasn't necessarily our dream house. And so a couple of years ago, we did an addition because we had it was a really small house with one living area and two teenage boys. So we did an addition where they had a game room, and I envisioned, you know, teenage boys sprawled, sleeping on the couch, you know, all through high school. And then I got a new master because my mom is a widow now. And so she comes and stays with us in our old master. So that was kind of a fun project. But now we're opening up our kitchen and updating that. So we are without a kitchen. We're without the whole old half of the house for until June. And we've been at it 2 weeks. And then we're doing a deck addition because our old deck was like a hazard, a physical hazard of people tripping or falling through the wood. So we had to do something there.
Well, I hope you have good insurance for that. But that sounds like a fun project with the deck. And you were talking about teenage boys. And I'm thinking, I hope she's expanding the kitchen because teenage boys need... They need like a refrigerator
each, right? It's insane. Yes. So yeah, that puts a little chaos in life, but isn't that kind of what life is?
Life is chaos. It's a beautiful chaos.
Spinning a lot of plates. Spinning a lot of plates.
Speaking of spinning a lot of plates, and one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast with you, because you're such a superstar working mom, a married woman. I met your husband. I sent him a Facebook friends request recently. I don't know if he accepted, but it's funny. Last time I had you on the podcast, I said they had a crush on you. And now I'm sending friend requests to your husband. But I wanted to talk about, being a female dentist, being a mom, kind of juggling and spinning all those plates in the air. And you, besides being a dentist, besides... owning your own practice, you are also a lecturer, so you travel a lot. You're always helping people online, those who took your course, you're always there. It always amazes me because any time of like day and night, someone posts a question and you're always helpful. Except for when you go on vacation, I really have a lot of respect for you for doing that, just providing yourself space to relax. And we're going to talk about that a little. So I really wanted to talk to you and see how you manage all those spinning plates, how well you manage those spinning plates. So before we get started, just give us a really quick bio about your journey in dentistry and how we got here today.
Just a real quick bio. I grew up in Orange County, California, down in your neck of the woods. I graduated high school in 1995 and hopped in our family RV and drove across the country to undergrad to a really small Christian college called Houghton College, kind of in the middle of Amish country near Buffalo and Rochester, New York. And I played, I got a soccer and academic scholarship there. And that's where I met Tom. And that's where I decided, oh yeah, it, like in my mind, it was always career. I was going to be like a emergency room trauma surgeon, something exciting. And then when I met Tom, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of want to be a wife and a mom and all that stuff too. And decided on dentistry. My dad was a dentist. And so I applied to, my state residency was kind of in question. So I applied to a bunch of private dental schools where state residency doesn't matter as much. And I saw that Creighton was the cheapest one in the country at the time. And I was like, oh, okay, check that box. And I got in. So, like without an interview. So I was like, maybe that's where I'm supposed to be. So I visited and loved it there, graduated in 2003. And then instead of joining my dad's practice that, you know, he had moved up to Vancouver, Washington, which is near Portland, Oregon, I joined as an associate here at a practice in North Idaho, where I currently reside, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, essentially.
I love how your quick bio is like a history, or rather a lesson in geography. Like you covered.
Yes, it is. Covered a lot of ground.
You covered a lot of ground there. But you're in your practice now. So tell us about that transition.
So yeah, I was, I looked at several different offices and I really liked Dr. Lin. He was kind of laid back. He goes, hey, here's our numbers. This is what you would make. Here's the contract. And you can, like, basically he could only offer me 2 days a week. And, but I just liked the vibe and the feel of the team, the culture, and really the, you could tell the family feel of for the patients as well. And so I joined him as an associate. Well, we built a new building. The load of the stress for paying for it was on Ken, but I kind of always had that ownership mentality. But I didn't really lose sleep about how we're going to pay the bills as an associate. I was busy raising my babies. And when we built the building, it was like 2007. And then the economy totally like crashed. So I would have bought in sooner, I think, as an owner, if there was there was nothing for me to buy into or loan against, or we didn't quite know how we were going to do it. So eventually I became 50-50 partner with a 7-year buy-in after 8 years of being an associate. So I'm kind of, and now we have a new associate who will eventually take over for buy out Dr. Lin in about 4 years.
I love this story, and I love that you entered that practice with an ownership mentality, because that's so rare, and a lot of associateships don't work out. And, you know, you and I are in the same Facebook groups and Dental Town, and we the same posts about the, you know, a bad associateship experience. And you and I both had good experiences, right? So it's not always as bad as it sounds. But you know, something caught my attention is that you wanted to be the emergency trauma surgeon, which I totally see you do. I mean, that's like that's perfect for you. And it's, you know, one of my closest friends was a nurse at USC Trauma for like 10 years. So the stories that I've heard from her, and you kind of have the same temperaments, but you're not an emergency trauma surgeon, but you're still saving lives. You're saving
yes,
lives
right.
every day. Tell me about that.
Over 10 years ago, I found out dentists could help people sleep better. And not only that, but kind of help screen such a underdiagnosed issue in our country. And we stare at airways all day long, and there's so many dental signs and symptoms. I mean, simply looking for a scalloped tongue could help you with a ton of patients sleep better. But yeah, I started on my sleep apnea journey, and I will tell you, there was some fumbles at the beginning and a lot of roadblocks, but I was determined. And so now sleep apnea is a pretty significant, important part of our practice, and kind of, you know, we're known for a lot of things, and that's just one of them. But it's been a fun journey. And now the whole lecturing thing kind of was an accident, I'd say, people are like, whoa, this girl figured it out. Can you come teach us? So I kind of started going into offices, and long story, I met T-Bone, and I had been doing some lecturing, but that's just kind of how it evolved. And I'm having a lot of fun traveling the world in the country and meeting dentists. You know what it is I like? I get to meet dentists who like dentistry. That's what I like about it.
Exactly. I love that you said this, because there's so much talk about being trapped in the op that I love hearing from people who either enjoy dentistry or they find a way to practice dentistry on their terms. Because I think a lot of the dissatisfaction, and it's hard work. And that interview actually that I recorded that I was telling you about, that I'm hoping to release within, hopefully tomorrow, we talk about, you know, the stress and you know, the emotional state that dentists sometimes, you know, go through and getting help and that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I think dentistry is one of those professions where we can practice it on our terms. And I think that's why it makes a great profession for a woman. Do you agree?
Yeah. And I do, you know, on Facebook forums and I just feel stress. Like I feel, there has to be a way that we can create the practice that we want or create the conditions that aren't so stressful. There's always going to be stress where you couldn't get that tooth out, which you thought you could, or the patient is mad at you for something you didn't even do. I think there's always going to be certain kinds of stress, but I think we could lessen it by taking certain steps to create a business, or even if you're not an owner, you can create an associateship that doesn't stress you out as much. I think just bear the load way too much. We don't delegate enough. We don't surround ourselves by a team that makes our life more enjoyable. There's so many factors that go into it, but so many things that are within our control and some things that are out of our control.
It's an excellent point. There's definitely, I mean, some, you know, I've always thought that if something is not within my control, that I don't want to worry about it. I'm sort of taking that Gone with the Wind, that Vivian Leigh thing, like, oh, I'll think about it tomorrow type of deal, because it's just like, you know, if I can't influence anything about a situation, then why would I
Right.
worry about that situation? It's sort of like the chips will fall where they may. And I really try to focus on the things where I can influence. Did you find that your career was always focused on building the type of a practice or associateship or your work environment around what you needed? Or is it something that you sort of grew into?
So back when I first started, I was 2 days a week and I was flying over to my dad's practice. So honestly, in 2003, I knew Dental Town was there. I joined. I didn't really know what it was about. I didn't know what was available in dentistry when I first started. I also, even as confident as I am, I wasn't really confident back then. I was like, oh, dentists do fillings. And when I got a crown, I was like, score. You know, I'm in North Idaho, so I did dentures and I always did extractions, but I didn't know what was available to me to be able to create, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't do CE. Looking back, I wish I had said it from the beginning that, my husband ended up being a stay-at-home dad. That wasn't part of the plan. The plan was he would work, I would work 2 days a week. But I don't think you could contain me to 2 days a week. So the pressure was on me for sure. I wish I had said it from the beginning that dentistry is not a clock in, clock out kind of job. I wish I would have set the precedence that CE is important to dentists. Good quality CE. Good quality CE that I actually might have to for to learn new procedures that I can bring into my practice and stop referring out as much. My husband, for many years, we battled because he thought dentistry should be you show up to work and you come home and you leave it all at the office. And it, I'm not built that way, but dentistry is not really like that as much as we try. You know, there are a lot of dentists who do dentistry to go play the rest of the time, but I'm not built that way either. So I wish I would have set, you know, a little bit more precedent. So instead, I was losing at the practice, losing at home. I was always like in trouble for going to a dental society meeting or, you know, I don't know. It's just, it was for a long time was a little bit of a battle until my husband's attitude changed about it. So then I got support from home. I got a cheerleader versus an adversary.
I think what you said is so important. It's so important to have that support from your husband. And I think, you know, you and I in the same Facebook groups, and sometimes we hear from women who are not getting support from their husbands. And I actually recently, I just saw something where a mutual friend actually posted that her mom gave her hard time about not being a good mother and sort of like while you're working your kids are needing you type of deal, and that's just a guilt trip that we don't need because we have our own mommy guilt, right?
Yep.
So let me ask you a question. So you know, you have this interesting setup where you are a working mother and your husband is a stay-at-home dad, which is awesome. And he's a great dad. Like, he's just not like, you know, just watching him. He's not just,
and he just
you know,
brought me coffee.
Clocking in and clocking.
He just brought coffee.
Oh,
in.
Nice.
Good man.
I love that. Tell him I said hi. Tell Tom I said hi. And I kind of have, so my husband and I work together. So for me, it's sort of like, it's, you know, neither one of us is a stay-at-home parent, but my husband is very much hands-on, and he goes into full-time dad mode whenever I'm out of town because I also travel a lot. But let me ask you a question. How did you have that conversation with Tom? Like, that's, how do you, like, sit down and say, okay, honey, I think one of us needs to stay home, and I think it should be you. How does that
happen? Actually, that wasn't how it happened. He was a PE teacher. And so when we moved here, there wasn't a whole lot of jobs for that. And he would have to sub and go back to school for some certification. He's like, I can't work in a classroom. And so he was doing like personal training, and our friend had a landscape company, and I was like about to give birth. And we kind of, I think it was my dad even who said, I know this isn't like traditional, and we come from a very traditional background, but What do you think about Tom staying home? I mean, he's going to a job that he hates that he doesn't even get paid that well. And I was like, yeah, I have more earning potential. And so that's kind of how it started. So yeah, it's stressful when you're the breadwinner. But I also think that Tom, he was never embarrassed about that as his role. He's like, I'm the smartest guy in the room here.
that's for sure.
And it worked out for, you know, he brought the baby to me at lunch and took care of the stuff at home. Like I was helping managing at home a lot. And I said, you know, we need, if we're going to do this, we need to kind of reestablish. I'm doing a lot at the office. I need you to do more here. Like, this is your job. It's not just like recreation time for you. So, and that makes me sound like a ball buster. I'm not, I actually am not, I don't wear the pants. I can tell you that right now.
Well, I met your husband. I clearly remember pants.
Yes.
I clearly remember him wearing
I
pants.
Don't wear pants. I don't wear the pants, but I do think we try to find us, you know, we have good communication in where he hears me, I hear him, I honor his, what he has decided to do and what he sacrificed for us. But when he stepped up to the plate a lot when it came, I was like, I was coming home and doing the laundry and coming, you know, I was like, you know, I'd rather spend time with my kids. So that was kind of a turning point, as well as the turning point that dentistry is not just a job you show up to. And so I've been, it's still always like, oh, I want to go to that function, but I come home instead. So there's still some of that pull for me just being wired that way, but kind of picking and choosing what the important things are with my time.
Oh, absolutely. I was a guest on someone's podcast yesterday and they asked me about time management and I have no clue about time. Like I'm terrible with time management because I feel like I'm constantly working. But one of the things that I said is that sometimes when you are asked to do something, and I feel like as women, we are especially wired to say yes. Like we're wired to play nice in a sandbox and to be good little girls and get along with everyone and try to please everyone. So I think we're wired to say yes, and just realizing that every time you say yes to something, you say no to something else, because you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And choosing what you say yes to is very important, because what are you saying no to when you say yes?
And I would say I maximize every minute of my day. But saying that, we have a lot of roles as women. When someone says, oh, you're a female dentist, I'm like, actually a dentist. But I do realize that, I do need to recognize that I am one. And we, men and women, bring different things to the table. So as a woman, we are a wife, a mom, or not. We're friends, we're sisters, we are sometimes business owners, we're dentists, we're a boss. There is a lot of things that go into all of those things. And I think we as women too often hold ourselves to such a high standard that we feel like we're failing at it all. And my comment a lot of times when people talk about mom guilt is like, sometimes I feel guilty that I have no mom guilt. And that's because we were called to be a dentist. That's a different calling. It is a calling. And we're wired differently than a mom that does the bake sale and the PTA and is the superstar. Why are we holding ourselves to that standard? I embrace the fact that I would rather go throw the football with my kid than do, whatever. I don't know. I just think we hold ourselves to too high of a standard. We're afraid to delegate. So one exercise I tell women to do is like, write down everything you do in a day, check what can't be delegated, and highlight everything that can, and find a way to delegate it. Or just realize you're not going to do everything perfectly, and that's okay. My kids realized that a long time ago, that I'm different than their friend's mom. And they're okay with that, because I feel like I was, honest about it. And then the other thing is with work-life balance is, I'm working 3 days a week now, and that's a beautiful balance, but I'm still producing the same amount I did in 4 days. And so I created this worksheet. I can actually send it to you. That is, basically what do I need to make in a year? What's my goal salary? How many days, a year with how many vacations you want or how many weeks off? If you work 3 days a week, you need to produce this. If you want to work 4 days a week, you need to produce this. So what procedures are you not doing that you're referring out or, not doing more comprehensive dentistry? Could you bring in house? Therefore, what CE do you need to take to do it? So there's, whatever the issue or the problem is or the stress that you're feeling, I just say, take a step back and let's see how we can solve the problem instead of continuing, that insanity, of trying, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Let's change the results.
I love what you just said. I love how you're beginning with the end in mind and sort of designing your life, because, if we're just passengers on this journey, then, someone else will design our lives for us, and it might not fit our ideal version of a perfect life. And I love that you have a worksheet for this. This is mind-blowing and practical. I love that about you. I definitely want the worksheet. But to start with, okay, this is how much I want to make. This is how much I want to vacation. This is how much I want to spend in my practice. And then reverse engineering from there to figure out what courses you need to take or maybe what kind of marketing you need to do for your practice. You know, I talk about this kind of stuff in seminars, but to see someone actually, you know, live that, I absolutely love that.
Well, and for all the women that don't have a Tom that stay at home, you know, like, I kind of get to show up at practice and pick them up. I'm like, so where am I going again? What time? Like, I don't have to be in charge of that. But my associate, she's managing everything at the home and making sure the handyman gets there and the nanny and, you know, all that. I don't have that stress. And so, you know, having an open, honest conversation with your partner, like, hey, I need more support from you. I'm drowning here. Or what can you delegate to hire someone if your husband is working full time and a professional as well? I think that the more you can take off your plate, the better. I'm a master delegator.
I love that about you. I love that about you. So let's talk about delegation, because a lot of us are not good at delegation. And I think the first thing that stops us from being able to delegate is that somehow we decide that no one can do anything better than we can, and therefore we must do everything ourselves. And then we decide that even if we could live with a less than a perfect result, then by the time we find someone to do it and explain it and train them, it might as well
do it myself.
Do it myself, because it's easier. Yeah. So how do we get away from this, and how do we learn to delegate? Please.
Well, that's a little bit of ego, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It is. Absolutely.
Like, even bringing in an associate who I love, I'm like, oh, that's my patient. I love that patient. And I'm like, you know, no, that patient is okay with someone else. Like, someone else can take care of them just as good as you will. I would say that getting the right team in place, some of us women have to be bosses too. And we're so wanting to be liked. And I do have a great relationship with my team. Like, I am dentist. We love each other. We're family, but I can have the hard talk with them as well. And it wasn't always that way. I wanted to be liked for a long time. So in getting the right team in place, not being afraid to fire or let someone go and they not like you, that's okay. That was hard for me. Having the tough conversations was hard for me, but I've just kind of gotten to the point where people now know they need to do their job, because Dr. Elliot is going to talk to him otherwise. My partner, he's like, Dr. Elliot doesn't want you parking in patient parking. I'm like, you don't either, but yes, I'm the bad cop. But that kind of happened over time. And I think getting over that fear of not being liked and just saying, you know, I own a business. Like, in what other corporation across this country do you not get talked to for poor performance? But here's the thing. I have 2 points on that. The first is they need to know what their performance needs to be. You need to set the expectations. Otherwise, they're always going to fail you, but you never even told them. I expect the room to be set up before the patient comes back. And this is the other thing to say too, is bring it back to the patient. So when you're not prepared, it makes us look like we don't know what we're doing. And then the patient doesn't have as much confidence in us. Not you're a terrible person. You're never on time. You're never ready. It's, hey, bring it back to the patient and to running and being a good team member to the other teams, not having to make up for you. So I think if you set proper expectations, don't be afraid to talk to them when they're not meeting them, and they'll know, they'll hold themselves to those expectations, because they know they won't get away with it. And the other team members, if they see you talk to the weaker person, know that they respect you more. And one other thing I have is, when I gave this talk on being a female dentist, is I had people Google the word nice. And if you Google the word nice, it says the origin of the word, not not the definition, but the origin of the word is stupid, ignorant. It's not a nice word, actually. So what I say is stop being nice and don't be afraid to, you know, get a team in place that'll help you.
So you're saying SBN, not JBN. You're saying
yes.
SBN.
Oh, yes, I am saying that.
Okay, so I 100% agree. I think that, and we see that a lot when dentists are complaining about their team. And it's not just women. You know, obviously we're talking about this because it's March, and I feel like we should talk about women's sort of journey at work and leading a team and so forth. But I think both male and female dentists are really not great at setting expectations. And we see those conversations where they're constantly disappointed with their team, but when you question them whether they set the expectation, it's like, well, they should know because they're experienced. You know, they worked for someone else who didn't know what they were doing either. So now they're at your office and you didn't set the expectations. I saw a conversation yesterday on Dental Town where, I thought it was on Dental Town, where someone, I guess their hygienist started selling something without their knowledge, and they were really upset about it, wanting to suspend this hygienist without pay for a week. And I was like, you know, there's no coming back from that. Like, you send your hygienist home for a week, that relationship is ruined forever.
Yeah.
Like, she's going to be passive aggressive for yep. the rest of your working life together, right? But when I started to question this person, there was never any conversation, never anything. So you go from, okay, you are hygienist, you should know better, to sending her home without pay for a week, and there's never been any conversation about what are the expectations of me as a boss? What are we doing in the situation where you feel like there's a product that you want to recommend to patients? How do you function in this practice as an employee, right? So we never had those conversations, and now we're taking those extreme measures. And I think that a lot of times our team feel like they're not being led. And I actually heard some team members say that when they have a leader who is setting expectations and they know what a good result looks like, they feel better. They feel better when they have this, okay, this is the box that you're in, and this is what it's going to look like when this box is full.
Yep. And they have clear direction.
Oh, absolutely. And you don't have to. I think it was you who posted something the other day. It said, I'm not bossy, I'm aggressively helpful.
Yes.
I love that, because I don't think we need to come off as bossy. An interesting thing about me is that I have a lot of long-term employees. I have one of them's been with me for 17 years now. Which makes me feel really old, but also good, because she's obviously, either she has nowhere else to go, or she likes working with me. But I have a lot of long-term employees, and the feedback that I get from them is that I've changed over time. And they say, oh, you know, you softened a lot after your second child was born. And I honestly don't think it's estrogen or whatever is involved. I think it's just me evolving as a leader mm-hmm. and learning to manage better. What was your journey as a leader? Like, how did you go from being reserved or maybe, you know, worried about coming off as aggrandizing and bossy, to becoming someone who can delegate and who can talk to the team and command respect without feeling like you're not being liked?
Right. And I feel like I always led by example, but that's not good enough, I'm realizing. Like, I'm working hard, they should too. I think that being an actual owner did give me a voice. I think my partner kind of wanting me for that role gave me a voice, and just getting older gave me more confidence. So if there's younger people listening to this, they may look at you and I, Gina, like we have it all together, but it wasn't like that. I would not, I wish I had discovered it sooner. I wish I would have fast forwarded that. but they may be just at that beginning. And so don't feel bad about yourself. It'll come. But I think it was just getting more confidence and understanding human nature. They want to be led. I think managing my soccer team, my adult soccer team, you would think to get people to show up and to fill out paperwork would be easy. But a lot of times they said, I only showed up because I was afraid of you. But I did a dang good job. We put a good team on the field. And that, I think, gave me confidence of, you know what? People don't mind that I'm being a jerk because I get results and they want to be led. And I think that realization helped me transfer to the office. Like, they want direction. I'm not being mean if I tell them what to do. I think that was a good thing for me. I don't read a lot of business books. I don't, but I come to work excited every day. I'm surround myself by people that like what they do. They like what they do because I delegate to them. They're not just sucking spit. So I think creating an environment where people like to be is helpful. And the team, again, knows that if you don't let one team member get away with it, the whole rest of the team rises to the occasion as well.
Oh, 100%. I feel like what's the expression? When you tolerate something, it's like you're saying that I condone that, right? It's almost like you give, when you tolerate a specific behavior, and a lot of times we're like, okay, you know what? She's a good hygienist, patients like her. So I'm just going to close my eyes because I don't want a confrontation. I don't want her getting upset. I don't want to lose her. And so we ignore a certain behavior. But when we do this, not only we let the hygienist know, in this specific example as a hygienist, that this kind of behavior is acceptable, but we're letting the rest of the team know that this is what we want. Because if she's getting away with it, then we must like it. Otherwise, why would we... Because they look at us and they're thinking, you're boss, you can do something about it. I can't, but you have the power to do something about this behavior. And if you're tolerating it, there must be a reason. It must be okay with you.
Well, I have to say there is some balance to that, because I'm not like a total hard ass. Oh, can I say that? I'm not.
Yes, you can say whatever you want.
I am not a hard ass. But I also know that people bring different attributes to the table, right? So I have an assistant who was an ortho assistant forever. She won't assist on surgeries or extractions. If she does, she turns her head. But in my mind, it's not that I'm condoning her picking and choosing which procedures she does. It's, I don't want to deal with an assistant that's passed out on the patient. So I said, let's celebrate the fact that this assistant likes surgery and this one is really good at ortho and makes my life easier for straight, you know, bringing ortho in-house. And the assistants are okay with that. But we had a discussion about it. You know, it's not that I'm condoning, I'm going to be a princess and choose what I do or don't do. It was an understanding we have that I'm not going to change someone. I'm going to celebrate their strengths. So, but then there's some non-negotiables, you know, so that they need to know what those are too. Like, you know, showing up on time, doing the notes proper, you know, there's certain non-negotiables. So I think clear communication as to what those are. I also had to learn that not everyone can read my mind. And I did that for a long time too, where I'd say, oh, I thought you knew. No, they didn't. I was like, well, I thought it was obvious, but sometimes you have to clearly state the obvious.
Oh, absolutely. And that, when I talk about setting expectations, this is exactly what I mean, because a lot of times we think we set expectations, but it sort of sounds like, okay, I need you to have a productive schedule.
Yeah.
What does that mean to have a productive schedule? Does it mean $5,000 a day? $10,000? Like, do I want to be a $10,000 a day dentist? Do I want a 10X? Like, how is it going to look? You know, how many patients a day are we scheduling? An hour are we scheduling? So, like, things like that are very important to get granular and detailed if you want the right result. And then the nice thing about being clear about your expectations is that you don't have people going back to you constantly checking in every time it's sort of like, okay, go tie your shoes and then come back when you're ready for the next step. No, this is what the result is going to look like when you're successful. Go get it done, right? Let's go back to something we were talking about, delegation, earlier. Are there specific steps that you follow to make sure that you're successfully delegating?
Yeah, so like I said, you write down kind of, even you could do it at home, in the practice, whatever, you know, environment, and you write down what you do in a day and you check mark, like, I don't want someone else doing payroll. So I'm not, you know, I delegate to a payroll company. And my bookkeeper, I do nothing with the books. I hate numbers and accounting. I'm really good at other parts of business. So I find someone that's really good at their job. I figured I want to get really good at fixing teeth. I don't need to be the expert in everything. In fact, with this addition, I am doing zero with even the design. I hired a friend of mine, her and Tom go pick out the backsplash because I don't care. I just know she'll do a good job. I know she'll do a good job. So that's the thing, is like, okay, what things do you absolutely have to be the one to do? Like this podcast, I couldn't delegate that. And what things can you delegate and find someone that you trust? Obviously, that sometimes that's the difficult part, but just, and also trust or know that it may not get done exactly the way you would have done it, but accept the fact that you didn't have to do it.
And absolutely, done is better than perfect, yep. Right? And I have to tell you, if I had to do it, it would never get done. And I have this experience in my office sometimes, or even here at Yappy, where something lands on my desk or in my email box, and they're waiting for some sort of a decision or the next step. And I am so buried with other things, I don't get to it. And then I become the bottleneck. And that's just not okay. And then I'm like, you know what? I don't need to be a part of every decision. We have so many customers. We have so many patients. I don't want to be involved in certain decisions. And so one of the things that I do is in my practice, we have a $200 rule. We call it the executive decision, where anyone in a practice can make a $200 decision, meaning it's going to cost me $200, whether it goes right or goes wrong. I can lose up to $200 with them making a decision. I'll be okay with it. Don't even tell
them.
Like, I don't care. Not that I don't care, but I trust them enough to make that decision. And if I lose the money, I don't care. That's what I meant.
Yeah. You could even set it up like if that's difficult for you, and knowing your personality, I think we should embrace the way that we were made and not try to totally be someone we're not. So for example, like, I have my implant champion, I have my sleep champion, I have my ortho champion, because they own it. So what my implant champion does is, hey, we did this implant, she's going to be due for a crown. She's the one that makes sure she has the parts and that the crown gets made and the appointments are made, but she can report that to me. Like, that's how corporate America gets things done. They have these meetings where they report. And so then there's at least some accountability. Like, oh, Dr. Ellie's going to be asking me about this. I better be prepared. So that I'm not the one managing all of these cases, because I'm better doing other things. Like, what is productive for you is working on patients, not managing everything in the background.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. And you know, it's something you mentioned something earlier about playing to your employee's strength, and I'm a huge advocate for this. And sometimes, you know, from the assistants, I have that experience in my practice where, you know, you'd have, like, I have maybe 9 or 10 assistants right now, and even when I had fewer assistants, there was always this conversation like, oh, it's not fair that I get to do all the FMXs, or it's not fair that she's doing all the ortho, which is like gluing rubber bands, and I'm here with the suction and battling the tongue with extractions. But you know what? This is, we play to people's strength. There's a reason why I don't do endo.
Same with me. I hate it. but right. But my partner and associate do it, so we keep it in-house.
Exactly. Exactly. That doesn't mean we're not a team player. That just means that we're playing to our strength, and we expect that our team will play to their strength too. So it's not like I'm condoning a prima donna right. behavior when I say, you know, you're the expanded function assistant. I don't want you sterilizing if there's something that you can do that falls within your responsibilities as an expanded functions assistant. And if someone is just, is not even an RDA yet, just graduated barely from the assisting college, well, you're stuck in the galley, you know, you're sterilizing instruments. Sorry, you know, get up there. I try to push people and help them learn, but essentially it's up to them.
Right. And that's the other thing you could say is like, hey, if you don't like being the sterilization, this is where you can go. Like they, you know, give them an opportunity for them to create the environment that they like too. Like my sleep champion currently, she loves it. And so we've created a way for her to move beyond just doing regular, you know, dentistry. So yeah, I think that culture is a huge part, and the beauty of dentistry is that we can kind of mastermind and create what makes us happy. And there's still stuff we have to do that doesn't make us happy, and that's okay. But for the most part, you know, and it's been an evolution, and I didn't just get there overnight. I get to work 3 days a week. My kids are older now, so they don't mind me traveling. That, again, was never in the plans. But we've created kind of this life that I don't think we'll ever find balance. I call it harmony, because sometimes your kids need you more. Sometimes the practice needs you more. You'll never balance it perfectly, but I've created a place where I'm not losing at the office and I'm not losing at home. And that's where I was stuck for a while. And so I think it was just, I got emboldened and I'm like, if I don't like this situation, what can I do to change it instead of just suffering?
I love that. Being intentional, being willing to make hard choices, being willing to change, and most importantly, willing to do something that someone might look at you and judge, you know, like the cupcake moms. I feel bad. Like I get, so I was a room parent for my daughter's class for 2 years in a row. And that was a lot, but I did that so that I can check off that box. And also I felt like, you know, okay, I'll do it once. It's important for my daughter. I am on the library committee. I've been to school. I've read them books. I am involved. I'm not completely right. hands off, but there's a limit to what I can right. do. And I'm okay with that. And my kids are okay yep. with that. I bet your kids are very proud of their mom. And I bet they're not sitting there going, oh, I wish my mom baked cupcakes. Do they?
My one son, when he was younger, he's like, Mom, I wish you stayed home. And I said, you know what, buddy? I agree. I get to be the fun parent because I'm not at home, right? I said, we could do that. I said, we'll get your dad going back to work, but we're going to have to sell the house and we'll have to move into... whatever. And we'll have to cancel our vacation to, you know, whatever. And he's like, okay, Mom, you can go to work. So now what I do, I don't volunteer at the school, but I'll bring them lunch, like, and I'll bring their buddies like taco packs. And at this point, my eighth grader won't let me come to school because he said his friends say too many things when I walk away. And that sounds like a humble brag, but I really am not allowed to go to a school anymore because, yeah. So, but I am there at the soccer games. I think I have to make the point too, that I think having a partner, has completely allowed my world to work, because I am involved in the community. I go to my women in business. I go to Rotary, or not Rotary, Chamber. If I want to go to my kids' soccer games, I can block it off and leave. And the patients, the hygiene, all that stuff is still going on. And because I have coverage all the time, I can go on vacation and not stress out. I can, I don't know. It just gives me so much freedom that when I'm on the road or whatever, my patients are getting taken care of.
That's straight from the TED Talk. The CEO of Facebook, Sheryl, why am I blinking on her name right now? It'll come to me. As soon as this podcast is done, I'll remember her full name. But she's talking about making sure that your partner is a real partner. And I like how you refer to Tom as partner. Mm-hmm. That it's very important to make sure that you get that support at home, because I think that's what a lot of us are missing. I have a question for you. Do you think it's easier for women? Because, you know, when I started dental school, we had about 40% of the class were women. And I think now it's probably 50. And I know, I saw Howard Ferrand just post something about the percentages of doctors worldwide. And there are some countries like Finland and Lithuania, where my grandmother's from, and Russia, where women actually represent majority of healthcare providers, of doctors. Is it better for us now? Or is it still a struggle?
I think it's funny, because when I went to Honduras, brought a guy dentist friend from here and met up with other dentists that are Honduran, and they think it's so weird that there's a boy dentist. Isn't that funny? but dentists don't make a lot of money in Honduras, and so it's just, and they don't have assistants. Like, they thought that was the weirdest thing. They saw me working four chairs, and it pretty much stressed them out. I think that, so women are about 50% of the dental school graduating. We only represent about 35% of the total workforce, and we represent about 60% in corporate. And that is because I think we are trying to manage the household and have a career. And so when you're working for corporate, there's a lot that, you know, you don't have to do that's extra. And I'll tell you, the business part of stuff is, you know, it's a lot. So how we switch those numbers, I don't know. But I think that we need to empower women to know that we can do it, and we can own business and still manage the home. I don't know. I don't know if that'll change anytime soon, because the fact of the matter is, the woman is usually the primary caretaker at home. Like, my situation is not normal. So it's easy for me to say, oh yeah, you can own this, you can lead a team, and you can lecture and all those things, when I have as much support as I do at home. So you have to do, I guess the point is, you create the environment that you can, that's within your power to change, and dentistry can give you the flexibility to do so, to create what works for you and your family. And just relax a little. Don't be a perfectionist at everything. You don't have to be the master at everything. Forgive yourself and delegate. Don't stress out. We don't have to be stressed out all the time. And don't have mom guilt.
Don't have mom guilt, for sure. And it's interesting you brought the associates into the conversation, because I do think that a lot of new grads are going into associateship because they have such a big debt. And I think also there's so much conversation. Even like, I've been easily triggered lately. Like, my husband turns off news when I walk into the room, because he knows I'll be talking to TV and having a rant about one thing or the other that's going on. But even marketing, like digital marketing, everything I see, everyone who is selling funnels is starting out with how bad dentistry is and how stressful and how dentists are struggling. And I'm just thinking, like, let's change the narrative.
Yeah.
Let's change the narrative here. And I saw someone post something like, I'm going into corporate because I don't want to deal with the management stress. And I'm like, that's the language. Management stress is the language that the DSOs are using to scare us into not owning a business and going to work for DSO. To me, it's not stressful. To me, it's the fun part of the job because I've learned a lot about it because I enjoy it. I'm not saying it's not stressful. I'm saying we need to change how we talk about it. It's just part of the job. You like it, you do it. You learn more, you do it better. You don't like it, you find someone to delegate it to. You learn to delegate in, you know, like I wouldn't, if I had to find an iron, I know we own one.
I don't.
If I had to find an iron at home.
I don't. I iron on the road. I totally get, I can suture, I cannot sew a button on, but I can suture a mouth, you know, it's, but let's celebrate that, right? So also say, piggybacking on what you said about the management stress, come work for us. And remember, this was an evolution. I've been in practice 17 years. I'm 42. This did not happen overnight, but I also didn't have the internet. So I didn't even know what I was missing out on. Like I was totally ignorant to the world of dentistry, living in my little bubble, which I wish I didn't have. But I also realized how much more stressful it would have been coming out of dental school, realizing what a loser I am because I'm not doing full arch cases. You know, like I would not, don't expect that out of yourself. When you first get out of school, you need to get efficient. You need to get efficient. You need to get good at giving painless injections. You need to learn how to do case acceptance and you know, treatment planning skills. Then you evolve into that next thing. Like it's not going to happen overnight. And I think we feel the stress of that. And I think we need to forgive ourselves on that too. Like, yeah, everyone wants to learn sleep, but when you first get out of dental school, you need to learn how to do a crown properly, you know? So.
100%. I had this conversation with a female associate that I recently hired, because she was getting distracted by shiny objects like, oh, occlusion.
Botox.
Botox. Yeah, she Invisalign. She wanted to take your course because all of the other associates in my practice took your course. All of my staff went. And I'm like, no, you still take 4 hours for a DO filling. So let's focus on that. We'll do sleep. I promise we'll get there. Let's just, you know, baby steps. And again, with building a business, you know, running a business, you mentioned something earlier. You said, don't look at us. We're older. We got this all together. We don't
I don't.
Maybe you do. You look like you have,
I said people may look at us like we do, but we don't. We don't.
So, you know, it's, and of course, you know, when you see, you go online and you see the highlight reel that everyone shows and it looks great. And then, you know, like I had a conversation with someone here on a podcast about, you know, some iatrogenic damage that he's caused and then going home and just having that in his mind. And I'm like, you know what? I've done that exact same thing. We've all done this. There are two patients with a little piece of titanium in their mesial buccal canal of number 19 because I was learning to do endo and I left it in there. Of course, I told the patient I managed it properly, but you know, it happens. We do medical procedures and sometimes things don't go according to the plan. Sometimes life doesn't go according to the plan, right? I mean, look what's going on now and we have to figure out how to do this. And but one point about owning a business is that I found that it's actually easier for me to have my business because then I can structure my days and my hours around having the life that I want. And what I found out is that I don't want to be, I love doing dentistry, but I don't want to be just doing dentistry. I like other things. And having a business allows me that flexibility. And then I have someone else who's working in my practice when I'm not there, and then I can do other things. And I'm sure that, you know, having a partner, like there's not one way of doing things. Just because something works for me doesn't mean it works for someone else. But I like that flexibility of having a business and being able to do my thing.
I think also, like, the last point, because I was such a lame-o and couldn't figure out the technology to get on here on time. I think is having a mentor as well. In as you know, I like to surround myself by people that I want to be like when I grow up, and people that aren't afraid to push you or be honest with you. And so T-Bone's very good at that for me. If you don't know who T-Bone is, Tarun Agrawal, he likes to push people a little bit, but I think it's a good thing. And I got pushed into technology probably a little sooner, or, you know, it's like always an excuse, like, oh, the money, and that would change our schedule. So, you know, all those excuses you had. What I like is that any excuse you have, T-Bone has like a way to completely destroy and shatter that excuse. And kind of how I've approached even with my kids and my team, it was like, any excuse you give me, we're going to find a way around it, right? Why you can't implement sleep, you know, all those things. So surround yourself by people who will push you and not always just say the nice thing that we want to hear.
That's excellent advice. And I think we're going to wrap it up on this note. If anyone wants to find you or they're interested in taking your course, and as you know, I am a huge fan of your course. I love how, you teach implementing sleep apnea in a dental practice, and there are other options. But what I really enjoyed about your course is that you sort of, it's like a cookbook. Yep. You know, I went home with a step-by-step of this is how you implement. And you know, the thing with sleep apnea to me, you mentioned scalloped tongue, and I, all of a sudden, like, you take a course, and it's like the blindfolds mm-hmm. have been removed. You see it and you're shocked. And I remember just before this, and one of the things that actually motivated me to take your course is seeing so much failed dentistry and just thinking, okay, there's no way it's stress, you know, because we're always talking about teeth grinding. It's like, it's not just stress. It's not just acid. There's more to it. I know there's more to it, but I don't know where it's coming mm-hmm. from. Like, I fixed this patient up just recently. What's going on in their mouth? Why is it all destroyed? And just sort of starting to notice certain correlations yep. and certain, you know, morbidity associated with that and certain, you know, body type and certain, you know, just getting
our feedback patients' health histories that are, you know, a novel.
Exactly. And how that affects what we do. And then I took your course, and like I said, it's like the blindfold's been removed, and once you see it, you can't unsee it. We've had all of our associates go to your course. I've had a lot of my team members. One thing that I've learned is, and it was funny because I didn't know what to expect. So I took your course and I didn't take my staff. And then as soon as I was there, I was like, oh, shoot, I should have taken the staff. So we had them all go. Like every time you had a course, we had someone go. And then, and because it's completely team driven. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't do any of that. I walk in, I'm like a bubblehead doll. You know, my hygienist already had everything done. And I'm like, yep. Okay, let's get you tested. Yep. That's literally how it goes. That's my part. And then the only thing that that I still haven't mastered is the George gauge. I always call, like, when it comes to that, it's like, Jeff, can you help me? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm playing with this thing. But one of the things that I wanted to mention about the course is that if you go, absolutely take your team, you know, learn how to do this, learn to recognize, even if you're not going to be treating, I think it's just such an amazing service to your patients to even talk
exactly.
about it and recognize it and referring them to the right place. And you suddenly feel like, okay, I'm not just a dentist, I'm a real doctor. Because I'm doing something that's beyond just, you know, prolonging a life of this damaged tooth, and that's really rewarding. So thank you for that. Thank you for pulling me into this and teaching me. And we're gonna put links into the show notes to your course. Yep. Do you have anything coming up that we need to attend? Are you speaking
anywhere? I have my own personal website now that I mostly keep up on the schedule where I'm gonna be. Erin Elliott, DDS.com, and it's two L's, two T's, and two D's. And then 3D-dentist.com is our 2-day course, as well as our sleep too. It was almost like I wanted to give in the first course everything possible, but until you go back and do it, like, it doesn't make sense. And so that the sleep two course is, okay, you've gone back to your practice, you've done some cases, now you want to take it to that next level, feel more confident in what you're doing, side effects, the science of sleep, all of those things. So we have those periodically throughout the year as well. And then I'm speaking at the Smile Source Exchange in May. I'm going to be at CDA South, Pacific Northwest Dental Conference. So a little, you know, as long as these things happen, I just got one speaking engagement canceled in May, unfortunately. For the most part, I'm just trying to spread the message that sleep is important to dentistry. And dentists are an integral part. Even if you don't want to treat it and deal with medical insurance and all that, we need to be talking to our patients about it. And then you can find me on Facebook and Instagram. And I'm kind of easy to find.
You are. You're very easy to find. And I really appreciate the fact that whenever I have a question, and this is, you know, I know a lot of people who are teaching and they're great, and but outside of the course, I have no way of getting in touch with them. And I know that when we've had questions, especially in the beginning, when we were just kind of going through this. And, you know, I remember Jeff delivering his first case, and, we tested the patient. The result was not what we expected. And he asked me, and I said, just contact Dr. Elliott. And he did, and he got an answer almost immediately, and we were just blown away with how helpful.
Well, I heart Jeff. I do. He's here.
We all do. We love him. Love Jeff. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. I know you're busy. I know I have to let you go, no matter how much fun I'm having talking to you. But we'll have you back. I mean, there's just so much unsaid, and you're always fun to talk to.
Thanks for doing what you do, Gina.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Smiles. Today's episode was brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. You can learn more about Yappy by visiting www.yappyapp.com. If you have any suggestions for future guests, or if you have any questions for us, you can reach out to Dr. Gina directly. Send your email to drgina@yappycentral.com. You can also find the email in our show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or on any of the apps that you're listening from. It's greatly appreciated. And as always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.